Intelligent Talk.
1170 KCBQ.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but if the Bible is really full of accurate history, how come the characters of the Bible are not corroborated by other ancient history? Well, they are corroborated. They're corroborated all over the place. In ancient history outside the Bible, documents contemporary with the Bible. We read about Jesus. We read about John the Baptist, King Herod, many, many others. There's also evidence from the field of archaeology. A plaque with the name Pontius Pilate, for instance, in Caesarea. However, one of the most exciting discoveries of all time came from Egypt just recently, an ancient coin with the name and picture of Joseph. Joseph from the book of Genesis. Joseph, the guy with the colored jacket. I will be discussing this fascinating discovery later in the program, along with a continuation of last week's discussion, as I promised you, how do we know God's personal plan for our lives? First, the latest news. As the drama between Israel, Ahmadinejad, and Barack Obama continues to play out, I believe some predictions may just be in order. I can't resist these little predictions. No, I'm not sure of these things, but I am reasonably certain, not because of any special mystical or prophetic abilities, but because human nature is involved, and human nature tends to be very predictable. I believe that Obama will try to cut a deal with Ahmadinejad that includes forcing Israel into a two-state solution with Jerusalem as the capital of Palestine, not Israel. Obama has made some overtures this direction in the past, and who knows? This may already be the secret deal that caused the Obama administration to report progress last week after they talked to Iran. Now, naturally, Ahmadinejad will agree to this deal and promise to stop building nukes. Big sigh of relief. And naturally, Ahmadinejad will be lying when he makes this agreement, and he will continue to build the nukes. He does not really care about the Palestinians, and he is happy to sacrifice them by sending a bomb that would not only wipe out Israel, but her neighbors as well. Israel will be forced to bomb Iran and take out her nuclear capability. Most countries in the world will condemn Israel for what she did. The United Nations will issue sanctions against Israel. Venomous, cruel, and monster-style anti-Semitic statements will be printed on the Huffington Post and MoveOn.org and other similar genres. Many Democratic politicians will condemn Israel, prefacing their statements with, I am not an anti-Semite. Obama will also rebuke Israel, but with a tempered, seasoned speech. Meanwhile, much of the world, including Saudi Arabia, will be secretly grateful to Israel for what she did. And then Obama will continue to push for a two-state solution, believing that this will cause militant Muslims, including Muslims in the Philippines and Muslims in Indonesia, to stop hating the United States. But it won't work, because even though it's not politically correct to say so, Islam is a violent religion. That's why they hate the United States. That's why they hate Israel. That's why they hate everybody else. It is a violent religion.
When Bob Siegel claims that Islam is a violent religion, he doesn't mean to imply that there are no peaceful Muslims at all.
Thank you, Dan. We always appreciate the special assistance of Disclaimer Dan.
In fact, a peaceful Muslim was discovered once by the famous paleontologist Paul Sergeevich, and the fossil remains can be found today in the Smithsonian Institute.
Now, not everybody sees the world quite like I do, such as those who give out the Nobel Peace Prize. And I gotta say, with first prizes like this, who needs a booby prize? Winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, Barack Obama. I have two comments to make. One is about the winner, another about the prize itself. First of all, nobody today with any sense of decency should receive such a compromised award. I mean, the company of fellow recipients just isn't anything to brag about. One of the winners, Jimmy Carter, encourages us to make deals with terrorists. Another winner, Yasser Arafat, was a terrorist. Now, I realize that a man's entire life should be examined when we are considering honoring his achievements, and little things like terrorism need to be occasionally overlooked. So let me add that Arafat was a rapist, too. On to Obama. Even if we wanted to suspend belief for a moment and pretend this award was not tarnished, what exactly has Obama done to deserve this grand honor? Where precisely do we see that the world is more peaceful since he took office? The committee claims this was for extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. Cooperation? What cooperation, such as the cooperation of betraying friends like Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Israel and selling them up the river? A diplomacy which allows unconditional talks with the Holocaust denier Ahmadinejad? Well, no. Probably the powers that be weren't thinking about all that stuff. Instead, they were rewarding Obama because he apologized on behalf of America to countries we should learn to emulate. Countries like Egypt, Syria, and Russia. What fine examples they are. The man has accomplished nothing. Absolutely nothing. Unless we want to count, a bankrupted country well on its way towards socialism, more governmental control than the history of our nation has ever witnessed, race relations that couldn't possibly be worse, inspired by a president no one is allowed to criticize without being dubbed a racist. That is America's award for electing the first African-American president in an attempt to put race behind us once and for all. I don't suppose, by the way, that the Nobel Prize Committee would care to instead examine a recent American president, one who made significant strides towards women's rights by freeing the women of Afghanistan, women who now serve in the government there, but who once got murdered for not wearing proper attire in public. Nah, I guess not. In our dreams, how could the freeing of women compare to apologizing for America's recent deeds over the last few years, which included freeing women? Well, we're on the subject of previous Nobel Prize winners. On a recent CNN interview, former president and Nobel Prize recipient Jimmy Carter denied that he had recently made a statement about Obama protesters, claiming that a good portion of them objected to the president's policies only because he's black. Carter emphatically clarified it. That's not what I said. Jimmy, do we have to have another one of our little talks? Jimmy, I realize you're now 85 years old, and maybe the old memory just isn't ticking quite like it used to. And granted, while you were growing up, Jimmy, television cameras had not yet been invented. But honestly, Jimmy, it makes no sense to deny what we all heard you say. On the subject of being 85, perhaps the idea of retirement is something you should consider. Maybe you can take up leathercraft or sailing, anything where you don't talk. But whatever you decide, Jimmy, the next time you make comments about racism or the sympathetic position we should be taking toward Hamas, you may want to activate your brain before you activate your mouth. Okay, put down the phones. I mean no disrespect to people who are 85 years old. My own mother is much older than this, and many at that age are sharp as a whip. It's just that Mr. Carter may not be among them. On the other hand, he may just be a weasel and a liar. Actually, I lean a little more toward theory two. Fortunately, there are some public figures who find it a little easier to admit their mistakes and take responsibility. David Letterman is one such person. Now, I'm going to defend him, even though he's a liberal, and politically there's little, if anything, that the man and I have in common, but I do believe in giving credit where credit is due. Unlike NOW, short for National Organization of Women, they have publicly condemned David Letterman. Now, as you will recall, David Letterman, instead of giving into blackmail, confessed over his own TV program that he's had multiple sexual relationships over the years with staff women. Now, evidently, and it's a little unclear because Letterman hasn't offered too much information, but at this point, it looks evidently like this took place before he was married, or at least before he was married to his current wife. Nevertheless, Letterman apologized many times for the acts themselves, for the embarrassment incurred by the women, for the hurt this caused his wife since he is now married. He chose this course of action instead of paying some sleazebag hush money. But such penitence is not enough for now. They insist that Letterman having sex with female co-workers was an abuse of power because they were subordinates. Now, people, I need to remind you, genuine harassment takes place when women have sex with a boss for fear of losing their jobs. That is, or at least was, the original definition of sexual harassment. Nobody has made any such charge against Letterman. None of the women have, but now still won't let this go. Ironically, they were strangely silent when Bill Clinton confessed to having a relationship with his intern, Monica Lewinsky. And when further allegations came forth from Juanita Broderick, claiming that Clinton had actually raped her, then president of now Patricia Ireland reminded us in a debate with Bill Bennett over CNN that just because a woman makes a charge, it doesn't automatically mean she is telling the truth. Well, duh, but that's not exactly what now had to say about Clarence Thomas when Anita Hill accused him of sexual harassment and was contradicted by every other female co-worker who knew her and Thomas. At that time, the lesson from now was a woman will never lie about an issue like this. Now, to his credit, Bill Bennett looked Ireland in the eye that day and said, I guess the lesson here is that it's wrong for a president to rape a woman unless that same president happens to be pro-choice. Back to Letterman. He did something Clinton refused to do when first accused. He came clean and he told the truth. It was refreshing watching now go after Letterman after the way they defended Clinton. I find myself wondering if we're living in the imaginary world of H.G. Wells. How do you spell hypocrisy? N-O-W. Well, enough of that story, because I can assure you there are far more important things going on in our country regarding sexuality, such as Obama's safe school czar. Boy, these czars are just the gift to keep on giving, aren't they? Kevin Jennings is our safe school czar. Safe? Safe? Jennings is a former school teacher who was once asked for advice from a 15-year-old male student who claimed that an older gentleman was having sex with him. Did Jennings call the authorities and try to punish this child molester? No. Instead, he encouraged the student to use a condom. Jennings is founder of the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Civil Rights Network, which probably explains why the school incident did not disturb him. Make no mistake. Had this been a female student having sex with a male adult, there would not have been anything to even think about. But somehow these days, when homosexuality is involved, it must be beautiful, even when a minor is associated with it. Now, the student, because of all the controversy, has since come forth to say that he was 16, not 15, but 16 at the time, which is the legal consensual age in Massachusetts, believe it or not. However, Jennings was under the impression that he was 15, wrote down the age 15 when he described this incident in his own book called One Teacher in 10. He also wrote that the student, quote unquote, left my office with a smile on his face that I would see every time I saw him on campus. So apparently Jennings was proud of the advice he offered since it helped to awaken the boy's true homosexuality. Okay, people, before I go on, I realize that many homosexuals today find pedophiles disgusting and are quick to protest when any discussion of homosexuality includes pedophilia. They're afraid we're going to make the accusation that all homosexuals are pedophiles, and of course not all homosexuals are pedophiles. So I am sympathetic to the innocent homosexuals. However, and it's an important however, the agenda of organizations like NAMBLA, North American Man Boy Lovers Association, NAMBLA, and their association with gay rights cannot be ignored, since they are purposely consciously using the strategies of militant gay activism to accomplish their mission. They ask the question, what is wrong with beautiful love between a man and a boy? They ask that question with the same earnest tone that others use when bringing up love with someone of their own gender. Members of NAMBLA have also marched in gay rights parades. Just a fringe movement, not worth mentioning. Okay, how about this one? In 1995, the American Psychiatric Association declassified pedophilia as an emotional disorder, and college professors such as John Spencer of Cambridge University and Bruce Rind of Temple University are teaching that we should lower consensual ages for sex. Rind actually challenges the notion that sex between an adult and a little child is harmful to the development of the child. Okay, back to Jennings. What does all this have to do with Jennings? Jennings has gone on record as saying that he gave poor advice to that student from long ago, but that's only because he was called to the carpet and he had to say something. Remember, previously he wrote and bragged about the advice he gave the kid, and now the topper of them all, Jennings is on record complimenting Harry Hay, an outspoken supporter of NAMBLA. Yes, sir, Kevin Jennings, our safe school czar. Parents, are you reassured as to how safe your kids will be at school? They'd be safer playing baseball in the middle of the freeway. In an interview last week with Sean Hannity, George Stephanopoulos of ABC defended Jennings by saying that, well, we have to look at the man's entire life and his record and his experience, really. I guess I don't get it, George. Aren't these incidents part of the record? Aren't these incidents part of the experience? Who cares what degree he has? Who cares how many accolades he has received? Who cares how long the man has been teaching? I'm more interested in what he teaches. I'm more interested in what he believes. By the way, his record includes the goal of mandatory gay sexual education for schools. Are we afraid to criticize a gay activist out of fear of being called homophobes? Just as we are afraid to criticize the president who appointed him out of a fear of being called racist? Is that the point we reach in our country where nobody can speak our mind anymore? Are we afraid even of a man who has praised a supporter of NAMBLA? We're going to roll over and play dead for this? Now just watch. You just watch. Mark my words, the day is coming when child molesters will have their rights too. And all who object will be called pedophilophobes. That's a word that you haven't heard yet, but you'll hear it someday. Pedophilophobes. Our country has gotten very sick, and the diseased doctors are not looking for any cure. Speaking of homosexuality, the House of Representatives voted Thursday to extend hate crimes legislation to protect homosexuals. Broad interpretations of this law can prosecute free speech, even pastors, if some nut job claims his violence against a gay person was inspired by a reading of Romans chapter 1 or any similar sermon that calls homosexuality a sin. Now, if you thought this was already a done deal, yes, an earlier version of this bill passed the House back in April, but it meant opposition in the Senate. Now, I have a few questions. Question number one, why have we heard nothing about this in the media? I did not even hear the modest little story discussed on talk radio. Now, obviously, I can't catch every single show all day long, so I'm sure there was something somewhere, but I listened to a good deal of talk radio, and I heard nothing either this week or the months leading up to this monstrous assault upon free speech. And I've heard nothing on Fox News editorial shows either. Yes, Fox News, the hard news, did do a report. Not a lot of reporting, but there was a report. Nothing from the big guns who normally are not shy about sharing their opinions. Nothing from Bill O'Reilly. Nothing from Sean Hannity. Not even Glenn Beck. And Glenn Beck doesn't seem to be afraid to talk about anything, but I haven't even heard this from Glenn Beck. My next question. Inasmuch as the House Democrats shamelessly attached this bill to a military spending bill, as if one subject has anything to do with the other, in an attempt to force Republicans into voting for it, I want to know how many Republican congressmen took the bait. I know that most of them didn't. I know that some of them did, as the stats are coming in. Yes, of course, I understand their dilemma. What conservative politician wants to explain to his constituents that he refused to support a bill that helped the military? My point is they could explain it to their voters. They had a responsibility to do the right thing instead of looking like doing the right thing. Let's think about this, because I got to tell you, the devious genius of the Democrats is not being noticed. They lured Republican suckers into an irresistible trap where they can delude themselves into believing they have the best of both worlds. Supposedly, a Republican congressman can think to himself, if a liberal asks me, I will say I voted against hate crimes and supported gay rights. On the other hand, if a conservative complains, I can explain that I did not want to cast my vote. I didn't want to do it, but I had to for the sake of the troops. That always sounds so good. Much as it sounds good to support the troops, our troops will not have much freedom to fight for if we continue to erode free speech an inch at a time.
Where are you going? Where are you going? Can you take me with you? For my hand is cold and needs warmth. Where are you going? Far beyond where the horizon lies, where the horizon lies, and the land into mellow blueness. Oh, please take me with you. Let me skip the road with you. I can dare myself. I can dare myself. I'll put a pebble in my shoe. And watch me walk.
Watch me walk.
I can walk.
I can walk.
I shall call the pebble there.
I shall call the pebble there.
We'll talk about walking.
There shall be carried.
And when we both have had enough, I will take him from my shoe, singing, meet your new road. Then I'll take your hand, finally glad,
finally glad
that I am here by your side.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound. Even more beautiful.
Back to the Bob Siegel Show. I received this over the internet. I get lots of forwards over the internet. I usually don't do much with them. This one is called Letter from One Angry Woman. It seems to be a little bit dated news-wise, but still extremely relevant. Here's why I'm going to read it. I would like to get your opinion. Is this woman being too harsh, or is this woman right on target? So write our phone number down, 888-344-1170, or you can send me an email, questions@bobsiegel.net. Contact me by phone or email. Tell me what you think of this. Again, little bit dated, but I think she's right on target about a lot of things. What do you think of her tone? Angry woman. She's going to sound very angry. She does not give her name. I think she should, because it's pretty well written. All she does is identify herself as a housewife from New Jersey. Here we go. Letter from one angry woman. Are we fighting a war on terror, or aren't we? Was it or was it not started by Islamic people who brought it to our shores on September 11, 2001? Were people from all over the world, mostly Americans, not brutally murdered that day in downtown Manhattan, across the Potomac, from a nation's capital, and in a field in Pennsylvania? Did nearly 3,000 men, women, and children die a horrible, burning, or crushing death that day? Or didn't they? And I'm supposed to care that a copy of the Quran was desecrated when an overworked American soldier kicked it or got it wet? Well, I don't. I don't care at all. I'll start caring when Osama bin Laden turns himself in and repents for incinerating all those innocent people on 9/11. I'll care about the Quran when the fanatics in the Middle East start caring about the Holy Bible, the mere possession of which is a crime in Saudi Arabia. I'll care when these thugs tell the world they are sorry for chopping off Nick Berg's head while Berg screamed through his gurgling, slashed throat. I'll care when the cowardly so-called insurgents in Iraq come out and fight like men instead of disrespecting their own religion by hiding in mosques. I'll care when the mindless zealots who blow themselves up in search of nirvana care about the innocent children within range of their suicide. Okay, now I need to interject a note here. She's confusing Hinduism with Islam, because nirvana is a teaching of Hinduism, also a teaching in Buddhism. What she means is that they're willing to commit suicide so that they can go to paradise. I don't think that takes away from her main point, but I thought I'd make that little correction. She continues. She says, I'll care when the American media stops pretending that their First Amendment liberties are somehow derived from international law instead of the United States Constitution's Bill of Rights. In the meantime, when I hear a story about a brave Marine roughing up an Iraqi terrorist to obtain information, know this, I don't care. When I see a fuzzy photo of a pile of naked Iraqi prisoners who have been humiliated in what amounts to a college hazing incident, rest assured, I don't care. When I see a wounded terrorist get shot in the head when he is told not to move because he might be booby-trapped, you can take it to the bank. I don't care. When I hear that a prisoner who was issued a Quran and a prayer mat and fed special food that is paid for by my tax dollars is complaining that his holy book is being mishandled, you can absolutely believe in your heart of hearts, I don't care. Boy, she is a little spitball, isn't she? And oh, by the way, she continues, I've noticed that sometimes it's spelled K-O-R-A-N and other times Q-U-R-A-N. Well, Jimmy Crack Corn, and you guessed it, I don't care. Continuing with a letter from an angry woman. If you agree with this viewpoint, pass this on to all your email friends. Sooner or later, it'll get to the people responsible for this ridiculous behavior. If you don't agree, then by all means, hit the delete button. Should you choose the latter, then please don't complain when more atrocities committed by radical Muslims happen here in our great country. And may I add, now she gives a quote from Ronald Reagan, some people spend an entire lifetime wondering if they made a difference in the world, but the Marines don't have that problem. And she says she has another quote that she would like to add, and this one's also from Ronald Reagan. If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. The angry woman adds, one last thought for the day. In case we find ourselves starting to believe all the anti-American sentiment and negativity, we should remember England's Prime Minister Tony Blair's words during a recent interview. When asked by one of his parliament members why he believes so much in America, he said, a simple way to take measure of a country is to look at how many want in and how many want out. Only two defining forces have ever offered to die for you, Jesus Christ and the American GI. One died for your soul, the other for your freedom. You may want to pass this on, as many seem to forget both of them. All right. That was Letter from One Angry Woman, a mother from New Jersey. That's all we know. What did you think? I found myself disagreeing with only one part. The humiliation of taking prisoners, making them undress, putting underwear on their heads. You know, I just don't think there's ever a reason to humiliate anybody. I don't mind punishment. I don't even mind harsh treatment if we're going to solicit information from them. But that kind of humiliation is unnecessary. We're made in the image of God, and I just don't think anybody should go for that. But I got to tell you, as for the rest of it, I think this woman was right on. What do you think? What do you think about that? What do you think about other issues? We'll take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number, 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. You can also reach me by email, questions@bobsiegel.net, questions@bobsiegel.net. Concerning Obama winning the Nobel Prize, Sandy in El Cajon writes, just curious, why so quiet about the Nobel Prize? Laughing out loud. I think she's talking about the fact that I seemed to have a slight opinion about it. Sandy also writes regarding the safe school czar in my blog version of it. Thanks, Bob. It's as if you are inside of my head, putting my thoughts and feelings down on paper. Well, I appreciate the encouraging words, Sandy, and I'm glad they were helpful. On the same subject, Mike in Champaign, Illinois writes, I remember before the election reading a prophetic word by a Pentecostal pastor in Texas that if elected, Obama would become the worst president in history. He's well on his way to opening the doors of judgment. Well, Mike, you may have heard me say last week that I actually think Jimmy Carter is our worst president in history. Of course, Obama's only been in power 9 months, and chances are he will be considered the worst when he's done. But the man says he likes change, so who knows, maybe he'll change. I'll wait till Obama's presidency is over to evaluate it. Meanwhile, I just don't think we've ever had anybody worse than Jimmy Carter. He was even worse than Bill Clinton, and that's no small accomplishment. Well, at the top of the hour, I mentioned an archaeological discovery that confirms Joseph. Yes, sir, no longer can he be referred to only as a fictitious character from the Old Testament. Neither is his name limited to the lead singer in the 400th production you've seen of some youth theater's Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, you know, the one where you were forced to go backstage and tell your dear friend that her child was wonderful up there, even when he actually stunk. Coins from Joseph's era have been discovered in boxes long ago stashed and ignored in Egypt's National Museum. They were previously believed to be charms and ornaments because some of them have holes, thus the slow interest and gradual realization that they were actually coins. One of the coins does indeed bear the image of Joseph and identifies him as the head of Pharaoh's treasury. This is the first piece of evidence from the field of archaeology that authenticates Joseph as a Bible personage who really, truly lived, but not the first time facts eliminated other disputes from skeptics. Israel's very existence at the time ascribed to the Exodus, and even the reality of King David himself have been challenged, but recent findings forced all honest cynics to retract their words and take a second look. David's existence is corroborated by two pieces of basalt with the phrase House of David in one section and King of Israel in another. And a stele from ancient Egypt also provides much earlier corroboration for Israel's existence as a nation during the time of King Merneptah. He's bragging about this war he had with Israel. He is the pharaoh who immediately succeeded Ramses II, you know, the pharaoh who messed up and saw his men clobbered in the Red Sea. All right, Sea of Reeds, for those of you just waiting to jump on me over accuracy. People, the Bible has been around for a long time and has survived attacks from every single generation. And yet, ironically, time also seems to be the Bible's friend as time continues to unearth ancient witnesses. Well, this same Bible tells us that after God made his doctrinal revelation, he continues to speak to us. Now, we began this discussion last week, spent most of our time on the interpretation of dreams. But at the end of the program, I promised it as a follow-up, I would talk about other ways in which God reveals himself to us. So the question that had been on the table is, why doesn't God continue to speak? And you'll recall I was making the point that he does. Some people today, and most Americans, if you interviewed them, the high majority, well over 80%, would say they believe in God. There are not that many atheists. But when you talk about a God who speaks, then it sounds kind of bizarre to people. And remember last week I threw out the question, can we speak? Well, of course we can. Can we do something God can't do? Obviously, God is capable of speaking. If not, we wouldn't be capable. And why would a loving God who created us for a purpose not speak and not reveal his purpose? Now, there's a whole theology called dispensationalism that we also mentioned last week, which teaches that, yes, God did speak, but he doesn't speak anymore because all of his doctrinal revelation is here. He's already shared the gospel. We already know how to get saved. We no longer need dreams. We no longer need visions. And the dispensationalists are partly right and partly wrong. It is true that all doctrinal revelation has stopped. If somebody came to you and said that God spoke to them in a dream or a vision and told them that heaven exists on Mars, that is adding new doctrine to the Bible. If somebody came and said, you know, God told me that Buddha is also a beautiful way of salvation. No, he's not going to do that because God doesn't contradict himself. As far as salvation is concerned, after Jesus came, God said it all. But as far as you and your personal life are concerned, God can continue to talk to you. So I'm going to begin today by talking about and sharing six preparatory steps, a way just to get our heart and our mind open to God's leading. And we'll begin that when we return after this message to the Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Principles for discerning the will of God in our life. Preparatory steps, how to make our own heart ready. First, you examine yourself and you ask, what do I want? A lot of people have no idea what they want out of life, and Christians immediately assume that what God wants must be the opposite of what they want. They think they should make a list of all their dreams and desires and then make a list of the opposite, and that will be God's will. They think God is this celestial killjoy who has a hernia every time we're enjoying ourselves, that God's just sitting there on his throne like a big meanie, and once in a while he wants to come down to earth and go, all right, everybody out of the pool. You're having too much fun. No, that's not the way God is. Now, of course, there are certain things that are sin, and he doesn't want our happiness to be at the expense of others, and yes, he gives us boundaries. But you parents, you know what it's like when you love your children. You would give them anything within reason. You may not give them too much candy. You may not let them play out on the street. There are things they can't do. You want them to go to bed at a certain time. But there may be some toy that they want for Christmas. It might look like the most ridiculous thing in the world to you, but you know it's important to them, so it's important to you. It's the same with God, because God is our Father. Psalm 37, chapter 37, verse 4 says, "Trust in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." Aren't those soothing words? Doesn't that say a lot about the love of God? God is a loving God. He has a lot of attributes. He's a just God. He's a judgmental God. But primarily, God is a loving God. And Ecclesiastes 3:22 says it's God's desire that we enjoy our work. You know, you work at your job at least 8 hours a day. That's a large part of your life that God wants you to enjoy. I'll never forget when this lesson was driven home to me. I was in college and planning on going to the beach with some friends. The event fell through, and I didn't have a car, and I didn't have a lot of days off. This was a Saturday. I was working two part-time jobs to work my way through school. I had left my house. I had actually been disowned for becoming a Christian. So I was on my own, didn't have a lot of money, could not afford a car, and seldom even had any time off. I was working and taking so many classes in school. But I had a day off, and now with my day off, I was just stranded. I couldn't do anything. Things were so desperate, I actually watched an old Pat Boone movie on TV. And don't think I'm dating myself, because Pat Boone was a has-been even back then. Even when I was in college, Pat Boone was kind of Pat Boone's actually a very talented, very nice guy. I just mean that with all people in Hollywood, his popularity had slipped. But I was ready to watch a Pat Boone movie. That's how desperate things were. That's how desperately boring they were. And I walked into the backyard of the house where I was living and sharing with some roommates. My roommates were not home. And I looked up at the sky and I said, "God, I know that whether or not I go to the beach today is not very important, but I got to tell you, I'm really disappointed. I'm really bummed out. And I just pray that for one reason or another, I'll still be able to go, that it'll just work out, even though I've already been told that I can't. I don't have a car. I can't drive up there myself." I said, "God, I realize this isn't as important as what's going on in the United Nations or some war, but from me, from your child, I still want to tell you that this is what I want." Well, I got a knock at my door not long after I prayed. There were two of my girlfriends, and they said, "Hi, we came to take you to the beach." I was taken out to Santa Cruz, California, 45-minute drive away, and what a night to go. They had an eclipse of the moon. I was out there in my early 20s, but feeling like a little kid, splashing, diving in the waves, and it hit me. If it was important to me, it was important to God, because I was important to God. To God, I was his child. Examine yourself and ask, what do I want? On the other hand, be prepared for the other side of the coin. What is that other side of the coin? I'll show you when we get back. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues, local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170, KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. How do we discern the will of God in our life? Well, to start with, we don't assume that God's will is diametrically opposed to our own. However, we do need to be prepared for the other side of the coin, and that is, this is one of those good news, bad news things, that is that God will at times go out of his way to ask you to do things that he knows you won't want to do, because there are times when you're going to have to take a stand for your faith, and he may put you through field maneuvers. Luke chapter 14, verse 27, Jesus says, if anybody would come after him, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow him. You know, the cross was an instrument of death. Jesus actually expected there to be 13 crosses on that hill. He expected his disciples to die with him. The only one who seemed to understand that was Judas Iscariot. He was the smartest one of the bunch, not the most moral one of the bunch, because he betrayed Jesus, but the others were supposed to stick by him. Instead, they fled. To a lesser degree, we can give some credit to John, because although he fled at first, he did come back and he did stand at the foot of Jesus' cross. Now, they repented later and the Holy Spirit came upon them, gave them great courage, and they were witnesses. But God wants us to be prepared to do things we are not always going to want to do. Sometimes doing something at somebody else's expense becomes what the Bible would call a sin. Step number three, as we prepare our hearts, realize that God is not so concerned for external things as for morality. Therefore, a lot of his will is already in the Bible. 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17, and as I've told you at the top of the show, archaeology has shown that we can actually trust the Bible as being very accurate. It is the Word of God. Historically, there have been fulfilled prophecies. It's a very time-tested book. 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17 says then that we know a lot about God because of the Bible. It doesn't mean we know all the secrets to the universe. But everything we need to know about being saved and about walking with him. 2 Timothy chapter 3 says, all scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. Now, this is very important. If you pray to God about something that he already told you about, if the Bible already gives you a command, and then you go to God in prayer and ask if you really have to follow it, did you know that God has another enemy called Satan who's allowed to answer that prayer? No, Satan's not some creature with horns and a pitchfork shoveling coal in hell. He's an alien entity who exists in some other dimension, who has access to our thoughts through some kind of telepathy, and he can deceive people. He comes in the name of God, and Satan is actually allowed by God to deceive you if you go and pray about something that the Bible already settled. For example, the Bible commands us to be baptized. Now, some of you have grown up in churches where you already baptized as infants, and or you're not sure how you feel about baptism. And when things are just confusing, or you're unsure, or you were giving disinformation even by your own church, God understands that. He takes that into consideration. However, I knew a lady, her name was Debbie. I knew her in college. She both read and knew and understood clearly that God was asking her to be baptized. But she had been baptized as an infant. I told her that biblically there was no such practice, and that when the Bible talked about us being baptized, it meant consciously, not necessarily as adults, but at least old enough as a child to know what we're doing. But because she came out of a Catholic background and had a very dysfunctional relationship with her parents, she was afraid of what her parents would think. And I said, well, Debbie, what's more important, pleasing your parents or pleasing God? You've got to do what's right. People aren't always going to like it. She made a decision to get baptized, and then she changed her mind, and I'll never forget the way she phrased it because it was kind of scary. She said to me one evening, quite excited and pleased with herself, I should add, she said, I prayed to God last night before I went to bed. And I said, God, if it's okay to not get baptized, then I ask that when I wake up tomorrow morning, I will just experience a sense of peace. And you know, Bob, I woke up the next morning and I experienced a sense of peace. I said, well, that's fine, Debbie. But when the Bible commands us to be baptized, it doesn't say unless your name is Debbie. Yeah, there are some things God will just tell Debbie to do. There are some things God will just tell me to do. There are some things God will just tell you to do. There are other things he's already told all of us to do. Number four, as we prepare our heart to hear from God, a lot of it just depends on the amount of time spent with God. I did campus ministry for quite a few years. And of course, college students are at a crossroad in their life. They're at a turning point. They're studying to see what kind of career they're getting. They know they might meet the person they marry while they're in college. And those were always the two big questions. Who should I marry? What kind of work should I do? Where should I live? And all the time they're coming to me as their campus pastor asking me what God's will is for their life. I said, well, I don't know. How much time a day do you spend asking God? Some of them spent no time during the day asking God, but they were sure spending time talking to me about it. Number five, realize God may not want you to know everything about your future. Imagine if your life, or at least the map of your life, was wrapped up like a piece of parchment paper, wrapped up with a little bow on it. And you said, God, what is your plan for my life? And he says, okay, and he hands you the parchment. And then you say, well, that's great, God. Can you unravel it? So he unravels it just half an inch. Go to church, study the Bible, spend time in prayer. Well, no, God, unravel the whole thing. I want to see and understand my whole life. He says, no, you don't. You think you do. But you don't. You think you want to know everything that's going to happen to you your whole life. Let me tell you, you don't want to know that because things are going to happen to you someday that today you couldn't handle. The Bible says that if you go through temptation or a testing or a trial, God will never allow you to go through anything that you don't have the ability to handle. However, just because you could handle it someday in the future, that doesn't necessarily mean that you would be able to handle it today. There's a story of a kid who knew what was going to happen to him his entire life. One day he tripped over a flight of stairs. He got up. He said, thank God that's over with. You see, thinking about it and worrying about it his whole life was worse than when he just fell over the stupid stairs already. Okay, we will talk more about discerning God's plan for your life next week. You've been listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.